spring break.
Yeah, man.
Coming excited. At you. It's Mike.
And Dan.
This is Comparing Apples to Oranges, our podcast where we compare two things in the same category that don't belong in the same genre. Today we're coming at you with...
cover albums. Albums that's entirely of songs covered from other artists. Kind of interesting.
Today we're looking at Bette Midler's It's the Girls, which came out in 2014 for all those people who... are they called middleheads or betheads? What would you call yourself if you're a fan of Bette Midler?
Midlings.
Midlers? Oh yeah, that makes sense.
Midlings, yeah.
According to the internet, it's her 14th studio album and 25th album overall. That's insane.
I guess that means she had a lot of live albums?
Live albums or soundtracks, and the Beaches soundtrack. I think she did Hocus Pocus soundtrack. I don't know if that's true. And then we also did Take Me Home, the bluegrass tribute to Guns N' Roses by the band Iron Horse. This whole series is dubbed the Pickin' On series, mm-hmm. as in like picking on a banjo. They have a whole bunch of other covers of different bands, and we decided to look at Guns N' Roses album. Why is it called Take Me Home? Is that a song that they had? Because that's not one of the songs that we listened to.
I think it's a line from one of the songs.
Okay. I'm going to be completely honest. Didn't know a lot about either of these bands. Now, I know who Bette Midler is, vis-a-vis my Hocus Pocus and Beaches reference.
More of a fan of her movies.
I think... I know Dolly Parton, but I think Bette Midler was also in 9 to 5. Is that true? Or it was Lily Tomlin. They're in the one where they're two sets of twins. What was that movie?
Freaky Friday.
No, that's no sets of twins. You're thinking of The Parent Trap, which is one set of twins.
Double Trouble.
Okay, double now you're thinking of Hocus Pocus again. You are not helping.
I might be thinking of the Olsen twins.
Of course
What's
you
What's that
are?
One where Jean-Claude Van Damme played both roles?
Twin something.
Twin Magic.
That's not a movie. You just put two words together. Okay, so let me...
God, what the hell was Bette Midler in?
Dude, I told you. Hocus Pocus and Beaches.
She's in a lot more than that. First Wives Club?
No, come on.
With Goldie Hawn?
No, nobody saw that movie.
I think they did.
Nah, you're wrong.
She's in The Stepford Wives?
Nope.
Down Out in Beverly Hills?
Mm-mm.
For the Boys?
No.
I got nothing then.
Big Business. That's what I was trying to think of. Bette Midler and Lily Tomlin played two sets of twins.
People are going to love listening to this. I'm gonna look up shit on our phones.
No, I'm going to edit out most of that. And I'm just
Mike and Dan look up shit on their phones. Episode 4. So she's in this movie in like 1998.
That's I'm pretty sure everybody's just going to be really happy that I came up with Big Business on my own and didn't have to look it up, which is what happened, everybody. Okay, so.
Ooh, Fred Ward was in that too. Call back to our Tremors show. That we did.
Fred Ward's the third best.
Michael Gross was also in that movie.
that contract.
Shit you not.
Are you just looking up Tremors, though?
No, I'm looking up Big Business. Look at the cast.
Lily Tomlin.
Bette Midler. Lily Tomlin. Fred Ward. And if you go down about the sixth one, Michael Gross.
That's terrible.
We only cover Michael. This is the Michael Gross and Fred Ward fan show.
We call it
Fancast.
We call it Mike Check because we're checking in on Michael Gross.
Making sure he's still alive.
Okay, this was one of the opportunities for Dan and I to look at something almost with completely fresh eyes because neither of us are midlings. And I'm not a huge Guns N' Roses fan, nor did I. Well, I think it's because I never listened to their music on purpose. Like, I never went out of my way to listen to Guns N' Roses. What about you?
I never even heard of Iron Horse until you told me about them last week.
Right, and I hadn't listened to this album. I only listened to their Modest Mouse, and then we listened to their cover of Kanye West's song,
Heartless,
too.
Heartless, yeah. You know, the thing about these songs is that I wasn't that familiar with Bette Midler, other than, like, that The Rose.
Right.
You know, I didn't really know, you know, much of her other music. Hadn't heard none of Iron Horse, but I had heard pretty much every Guns N' Roses song that was on on the Iron Horse cover list, and I had heard pretty much every song that Bette Midler covered on her album too.
I knew. I don't know if I would have been able to tell you the name of the song or the name of the artist of Bette Midler's track list.
But if you heard a few bars of you'd be able to sing along with it.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly from the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's called It's the Girls because it's all covers of famous girl groups.
Which is really cool idea.
Yeah, it is.
And she does a good job of, I don't think she focuses, but she sort of highlights some great bands from Motown era.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of before that, and then some lesser known bands as well. And then, like you said, right up until like mid-90s mm-hmm. stuff too, which is really cool.
Yeah. And a lot, and some of the groups are more well known than the others.
Right, like the Supremes. Everybody knows them. Andrew and Sisters.
Martha and the Vandellas.
Right.
The Shangri-Las.
TLC.
The Shirelles. And some of them even get a couple of spots on her list. Like the Shirelles had two different songs on here.
Right.
And then some of them are, you know, a little lesser known. You know, maybe only had like one or
like the Shortettes.
Yeah.
Or is that how you say it? Short Cordette. Maybe it's a hard CH.
Cordettes.
Yeah. I really doubt that.
But you know the song
yeah,
that they did.
Exactly.
Mr. Sandman. So I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, I could listen to these two albums not really knowing so much about the people that were performing the actual songs on the album, but being familiar with the songs themselves. I thought that was kind of cool. And it kind of made me enjoy the albums
a
little bit more.
Dan and I don't always enjoy the media we pick.
Each other's company.
Ooh, take that, friends. It's not that we pick bad stuff. It's that we usually pick stuff we're not familiar with. And it just so happens, I guess, that we have impeccable taste.
Uh-huh.
And so most of the stuff we... most of the media we haven't consumed... deserves to be left out in the street. But so this time was a pleasant experience mm-hmm. for both of them.
Yeah.
I found both of them fun to mm-hmm. listen to.
Yeah, it wasn't a chore at all.
And we always, I'm jumping a little ahead of myself, but we always talk about one of the criteria is re-listenability for when we're talking about albums. And I listened to both of these more than once, not just, you know, so I could talk intelligently, which is the only way I try to talk, uh-huh. of course. Lost track.
Despite what you're hearing now, we are trying to speak intelligently.
Yeah, when I was complimenting myself, I sort of got off track. Sorry.
as happens.
I found myself, sometimes it's a chore to go through the album more than once,
mm-hmm.
But I found myself intentionally trying to listen to these two albums.
For example, Dexy's Midnight Runners.
You know, that was pretty rough.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was hard.
That's what, you know, that's what she said.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about cover bands.
Good, because we're 10 minutes in. We haven't talked about shit.
Yeah, I thought we did. Actually, this is like the most focused we've been in an intro. We talked about the two things and what we're talking about. So now let's get off, you know, drastically off topic. That's what everybody tunes in for.
Yep.
Do you like hearing covers of songs from a live band? Like if you go to a place that plays live music
mm-hmm.
and the band is playing, would you rather a band play music that you know
mm-hmm.
or would you rather go see a band that only plays their music but that's why you're there? Do you understand that question?
Yeah, okay. I guess it depends on the band. So if I go to see like a big concert,
okay,
I want to hear their songs.
Right.
Like if I go to see Bon Jovi,
right,
I don't want to hear Bon Jovi doing covers of other people's shit.
Okay.
Like if he sneaks like a couple things in there and you're like, oh, that's kind of cool. He did a Jimi Hendrix song or something like that. Or like when I went to go see Stevie Wonder a few years ago, you know, I go there because I like Stevie Wonder and I want to hear Stevie Wonder songs. But if he sneaks in, you know, a cover of a John Lennon song or something like that, I think that's kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for example, my dad's group.
Right.
My dad has a band that plays, you know, very, very small, local.
They also have original tracks that your mom is not very enthusiastic about.
And that comes
about.
To my point here. when I go to see my dad's, you know, band play, I like hearing the cover stuff they do.
Right.
I'm not so hot on the original stuff. That's usually the time where I'm kind of, like, going to the bathroom.
Right.
Are going to get another bourbon,
right.
Are checking my phone.
Just standing outside,
patiently. Or just standing outside for 3.5 minutes till the song is over. For a situation like that, like if I was going to see like a local group mm-hmm. in a bar or mm-hmm. a club or something like that, I'd probably want to hear covers. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. I completely agree with you. Now I'm going to throw a curveball your way. Would you rather... Let's say Bon Jovi. That's a good example. Let's say Bon Jovi's like, hey, I'm going to put out Slippery When Wet 2, all new tracks. You know, you can buy it at Target, get some bonus material. Or would you rather, for the same price, Bon Jovi plays all of Bob Marley's hits, where it's just Bon Jovi covering Bob Marley? Which album would you rather have? Do you know what I'm trying to get to here? So it's like,
I kind of
want to
hear that album now. That sounds like pretty good, actually.
First of all, it's going to be garbage, okay? Bon Jovi trying to sing Exodus.
Exodus.
No, it's Bon Jovi. So he's from New Jersey. He doesn't know how to say Exodus like that.
Exodus.
No, that's still you, bro.
I could have swore it was Bon Jovi.
He's going to be like, you're going to do Shot to the Heart. So Shot to the Heart, four syllables. Mm-hmm. Exodus, four syllables. Mm-hmm. Movement of Ja People. Dude.
Movement of Ja People.
But he's singing it to the beat of Shot Through the Heart.
I think you can pull it off.
That's wrong. So what I'm trying to get to is, do you want original content on a CD, or do you want an artist you like covering somebody else?
I'd say I would usually want original content. Mm-hmm. But if every 7 or 8 years they want to do a cover album, I mean, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want them to get comfortable in that, because I think that lessens their creativity if they can just fall back on singing other people's shit.
Right.
You know? And I think you see that with artists as they get older. And I guess, you know, kind of with Bette Midler here. Because I don't know if it was an original album by her, how well it would have sold.
This was like, it's one of her top 5 selling albums.
Yeah, it was
Beaches, like right after Beaches soundtrack, which is awesome.
Yeah, and Beaches, I guess, in the late 80s, early 90s.
That sounds right.
Like that. I think at this point in their career, and I'm actually going to come back to that when I do my recommendation.
Oh, cool.
At the end.
Okay.
Of somebody who was really big in like the 60s and like early 70s. And then if they came out with a new album today, nobody would probably give a crap about it. But if they come out with a song of like covers, covers that are done from different from the original, then I think that's kind of cool. And I think kind of gives them a little bit more credibility with a different type of audience, or with a different section of the audience.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's a really good point. And I was just thinking about, I know we talked about this last time, the posthumous albums, but with Johnny Cash, like everybody talks about his Hurt cover because that's the one that I think permeated popular culture the best, especially because it had the video of him just looking, you know, just destroyed by age and his lifestyle. And but he does a cover of Soundgarden's Broken Cage or Rusty Cage, and it's amazing. Like, I'll listen to, you know, the Chris Cornell one, and it's good, but like, now I prefer the Johnny Cash one, because he's doing it on like an acoustic guitar, and he's just so raspy, you know?
It's funny that you say that, because there was actually a few songs on the two albums that we listened to today that I actually preferred the cover.
Yeah. And I think that's
than the original.
And I don't think that's an issue of the quality of the original, because in a lot of ways, of course, we wouldn't be listening to it if those people hadn't put it out.
Right.
Covering a song is always tricky, because you should acknowledge where it came from, but you shouldn't exactly duplicate it, because then it seems, one, sort of like stealing, and then two, it seems sort of lazy. Like, if you do it the exact same way, you think that you're as good as the original. I don't know. It's a complicated thing, because I usually like covers. But so many people try and cover Beatles songs that they don't put a new twist on it. And you're like, well, I'll just listen to the original. What's the point? I don't know. It's a complicated thing.
Yeah, I kind of think
fine line.
The same way. I think if you take a song and you totally change it and make it your own, then I think it's exactly what you were saying. It's less of you saying that I think I can sing this song as good, if not better, than the person, than more like paying tribute to that person. You see a lot of those like tribute bands that travel around, and actually there's some bands that
Dr. Zhivegas,
you know, make a lot of money just as cover bands, you know.
The Australian Pink Floyd. The
Australian Pink Floyd, like, charges as much as Pink Floyd
would have.
You know, for tickets. And they play big arenas,
yeah.
You know, and people just lose their shit. Like, you guys realize that's not Pink Floyd, right?
No, they don't.
They don't realize
that. A lot of those people probably were not alive when Pink Floyd was touring.
I mean, they even have my dad and my brother go down to Bonnaroo every year. And they have cover bands that are booked for Bonnaroo. Like, there's a Van Halen tribute band that was booked at Bonnaroo. A huge, you know, national music festival.
Yeah.
You know, booked a cover band because... You know, that's how, I guess, convincing or how, you know, talented they were.
I guess that's good. I don't know.
You're not a big Halen guy.
I'm not. But also, like, live music's going to be better just in general. Yeah. You know, it's like they're probably going to put on a better show than the original Van Halen because they're not so goddamn old. So, I'm a huge ageist when it comes to live shows.
They just don't care.
I'm just anymore. Very harsh. So let's talk about our criteria. As usual... Spent weeks talking about it, you know, really burning that midnight oil to come up with the best criteria we could, and we came up with re-listenability. You're gonna listen to it again.
Mm-hmm.
You're just gonna delete it forever. Throw that CD in the garbage where it belongs.
Dexy's Midnight Runners.
That's where. What about that one song we liked? It wasn't Come On Eileen. It was the other one.
Come on Eileen.
Oh no, that was it. Yeah.
Yep, that was it.
And then. We talked about how distinctive were the covers. Like, did the band do a good job of making the song their own?
We talked about Fresh Take. How was that? We talked about how it was different from, you know, making the song their own. What did we say about that?
We talked about how listening to the cover gives you maybe a different insight into the song.
Okay.
It's sort of like, it's the same words. Why am I not having the same... Not necessarily emotional reaction, just why is this evoking something different than the original?
I got you.
Okay.
Oh, theme. I was like, what does them mean?
Them live.
We talked about, before we started recording, a lot of albums, good successful albums, have some kind of theme to them. They're not just like randomly thrown together tracks. So we kind of tried to look at which one of these albums, since they were all covers... Were they just randomly selected covers? And we know that the Iron Horse album is all Guns N' Roses tracks, and we know that the Bette Midler album is all girl group tracks.
So they both technically have a theme already.
Right, but it's kind of, but quote-unquote themes can be so vast. You know, even Guns N' Roses with the different albums that you could pull tracks from out of their career
right. That
are so different. I mean, they didn't even have the same members in the group.
Right.
On all those albums. The girl groups, I mean, she pulled from different decades, too. So which one did we think flowed the best thematically?
Right. Sort of like a Weird Al, you know, album, when he's like, okay, we're going to do the food album, and it's all songs. the theme is food, but they're all different tracks.
I gotcha.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect analogy, as usual. All right, so let's get into it. It's the girls. Dan, you pop in Bette Midler CD for the first time. In a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the girls. Mm-hmm. Can you describe the cover art for this?
Well, it's Bette Midler as, I guess, portraying a three-person girl group as herself.
Right.
So it's three different...
Same dress.
Yeah, same... That kind of lends to what a lot of the girl groups were in the 60s, and that they would all have the same outfit. They would all have the same big hair. Right. They would all... And I guess the guy groups, too. I mean, the Temptations and the Four Tops were like that, too. And that they were all, you know, in sync.
No, terrible example. No. they all got to have different hair.
Yeah, they were all, I mean, they were all, you know, in lockstep with one another. And the outfits were exactly the same. They didn't really have anybody that differentiated themselves. I guess the Supremes a little bit with Diana Ross.
But that came later.
Yeah. But like at the beginning, if you look back at the original stuff, it was, you know, she was just part of a group. And, you know, she kind of eventually, you know, pieced off of that.
Right.
But, I mean, that even kind of goes up, you know, some groups even adopted that into like the 80s with like New Edition, which where they all had the same outfits.
Sort of like Boys to Men a little bit. Well, they all had like a silky shirt. That was just like the uniform of that time.
Yeah, and I think that was, it was that, that uniformity.
Yeah.
Because it was so focused on the overall harmony of the group, and it wasn't one person with some backup singers.
Right.
Like some, like a lot of groups are. It's Bette Midler on the cover. She's playing three different roles because she's so talented. That was one thing I was kind of worried about going into this album, I think, is taking songs that were originally sung by three or four people and breaking it down to one person. I didn't know how the dynamic of that was going to work. But she actually had background singers on
full,
this.
Like, full band. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, the band from that time, too. They had, like, horn section. Mm-hmm. You know, they had... Bette Midler is sort of... She's definitely a show singer. Mm-hmm. Like, she's definitely in charge of the music, where her voice is going to be number one. Everybody's going to harmonize near her or back her up, which, you know, she's on the cover three times. There's no problem with that. And I mean, like, I don't know the history of this because I wasn't like, there's no Wikipedia thing on this besides the track list and the facts I already read. But I don't, this seems sort of like something that someone would come up with and say, who are we going to get to do this? And they're like, well, we can't get Celine Dion because she's from Canada. She doesn't know any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, let's, you know, pitch this to Bette Midler because she's an easy ticket. Like, everybody recognizes the name and, you know, she's already put out 13 studio albums. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, let's tack one more on there. That was my feelings after I listened to this because of just, like, the quality of songs picked and then the level of focus on her. That's sort of what I got out of it.
And probably if it was somebody that didn't have her star power, you might not be able to get that quality of song.
You're not going to, like, Vanessa Carlton isn't going to, they're not going to be like, hey, this is a great idea. But it's all, I think it had to be somebody with, not older, but somebody who had, you and I had listened to a lot of this music before. I don't think that's entirely common for people to recognize the Andrews Sisters. You know what I mean? Or Mr. Sandman, except from like a movie maybe. And I think they needed to draw an older audience as well. And I think Bette Midler's sort of like a perfect fit for that.
And
where
and,
she brings in everybody.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it too like political here, but most of the groups that she covers are African-American artists. And I think that that's kind of interesting too. And it might be, you know, kind of a, I don't want to say a ploy, but kind of an idea by the record studio to, you know, pull in these older songs to a different audience, if that makes any sense at all.
I think that makes perfect sense.
Because I know this happened a few years ago, if you remember. I always like to do my Michael McDonald impression.
Of course you do.
And Michael McDonald did a whole album called Motown.
That makes perfect. Who better?
Who better than my than Michael McDonald?
He's like
to do a Motown album.
Just the whitest piece of white toast you could find.
Right. From right here in St. Louis, Missouri, by the way.
What?
Ferguson, Missouri, as a matter of fact.
That makes even less sense.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
You would think that he'd have a little street cred then.
No.
Just no. He's
this is when it was pearly white.
Dang.
in Ferguson, Missouri.
That makes sense.
But he did an album called Motown, and it was all covers of different Motown artists.
Hmm.
And it sold insanely well, so well that they, just the next year, they came out with Motown 2, which was another cover of all Motown songs. It sold insanely well, and it actually, like, I remember hearing those songs on commercials, and I got your picture hanging on the wall, but you can't see it. Call to me when I call your name.
It's, and here's the, like, the plain and simple of it is, the reason these people are singing those songs are because they're owned by that company. You know what I mean? It, like, the whole Barry Gordon nonsense where it's, like, the tragic story of the super talented person doesn't know how to read a contract, and the guy's handing them the paper saying, hey, we're going to cut you, you know, the biggest check you've ever seen in your life. Oh, by the way, we're going to take all the rest of the money, and you're not going to get anything. Like, this is just the 20 years down the line, this is what happens. They're like, we still own this music.
Yeah.
We're going to have...
We can do whatever we want with it. We're going to have this old white guy do it.
Right.
And it's going to make...
So much
millions
money.
Of dollars.
Yeah.
over songs that we already have right. in the coffers. We don't yeah. have to. We don't have to hire songwriters.
Right.
We don't have to. You know, we just got to get a band. We got to get somebody to arrange it.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
But that's what it kind of reminded me of is take this older white artist, have him sing songs that were traditionally sung by African-American artists, open it up to a whole new audience.
Yep.
Yeah. Make a lot of money. I mean, this album sold...
Number three.
You know, especially for the fact
like 40,000.
That it just came out less than 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And albums don't sell like they used to. You know, you don't get albums that sell 10 million copies
but
anymore.
You know who's buying albums are this demographic.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's not people like you and I.
Yeah.
You know, I remember going out to Best Buy.
Waiting in line for the latest 2 Chainz album,
yeah.
right?
No. Not 2 Chainz.
Back then, it was just 1 Chainz.
Yeah, he only had 1 Chainz back then. This appeals exactly to that demographic that still buys albums. Like, that still goes to Target, like you said, and still goes to Best Buy. You know, walks into Best Buy and can't find shit. And, of course, there's nobody to help you.
They all got fired because they work at Best Buy.
Because there's...
And they were also stealing. So
it's so better than Circuit City everywhere. God.
Yeah, that's because they're closed, bro.
That's why they closed. Because nobody was there to help anybody buy anything.
They were all at Radio Shack trying to buy batteries.
They were all at Best Buy buying their stuff. All the Circuit City folks. But yeah, I think it appeals directly to that demographic. I mean, how old's Bette Midler? She's got to be in her 60s.
Yeah, got to be early 70s, 60s, right?
You know, the people that around that age, you know, they're not, you know, on the Pirate Bay. Is that still a thing? Is Pirate Bay still around?
Yeah, I broke my computer today. I barely got these notes down. I had to re-download Microsoft 10, okay? 2010, not 10.
You had to go back to XP.
Yeah.
To find something that didn't have a virus on it.
By the way, Windows 10 won't let you enter safe mode. Just that's a problem, guys. We should work that bug out.
Yeah, let us pirate more stuff.
No.
Windows.
Okay.
We need safe mode because of all the viruses we
also
download.
It's called safe mode. You should be able to enter it. All right.
Or you could just not download shit illegally.
That's not going to happen, bro.
Yeah.
All right, I'm not going to let Bette Midler take my money.
I'm just throwing it out there as a...
Here's the alternative. You would have spent money to listen to Bette Midler sing...
Wouldn't be the first time.
One Fine... Oh, that's not a good example. That was a good song.
Yeah, it was a really good song.
Actually, the title song, It's the Girl, is a pretty dumb song. Mm-hmm. So you would have had to pay money to listen to that. Are you okay with that?
You had a hard time finding a song on there you didn't like. I could tell.
Yeah. There's 15 on there, and like 10 of them are really strong.
I think that should tell you that it's okay to spend money on Bette Midler.
Well, no! That was my point!
You had to get all the way to track 15 until you found one that you didn't really like.
I thought that was the first track. These are out of order. Or maybe my download was out of order.
Well, what do you expect?
I listened to it on Amazon Prime. Full
yeah,
circle.
Yeah,
full,
you did.
I paid for... Oh, no, I did pay for this! Oh! Oh, I feel so bad.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Eggs on your face.
So, and then let's talk about Iron Horse. Dan, gut reaction, how do you feel about bluegrass music?
Not a big fan.
Oh, if someone plays a banjo, I'm going to listen to that song. And that's not always a good way to live right now because there's a lot of people hating on Mumford & Sons. Mm-hmm. But I love the banjo. I think it's because I was born in Missouri. And mm-hmm. it's just, you know, I actually haven't listened to any bands with banjos in them until I was in college. You know, it just wasn't popular. Like, bluegrass music was just the sort of stepchild of country music, sort of pushed in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of, I don't think it burst to the mainstream, but it just became more accessible.
Yeah.
And I love it. And the idea that bluegrass songs have the content of rock or popular songs mm-hmm. is just a great idea. I really like the whole series, the Pickin' On series, just because I think it's a really fun idea.
Uh-huh. I kind of feel the same way, similar way, in the fact that I don't think I could see myself listening to a bluegrass album of original songs.
That's fair.
But after listening to this, I could totally see myself listening to other albums that they've put out.
Right.
Like you were talking about the AC/DC one.
Yeah.
I really want to hear that.
Right.
Now.
And here's the thing. I can tell you, as an AC/DC fan, I don't think I've heard a lot of people cover them. I don't mm-hmm. know if it's, one, they don't know how to, like, it's so tempting to just do it exactly.
Exactly.
Because,
like, yeah,
you know, that Bon Scott and Brian Johnson voice, mm-hmm, Brian Johnson's just covering Bon Scott effectively. I mean, like, yeah, you know what it sounds like.
Yeah, they are a cover band.
Yeah. And then, like, the whole, like, the guitar riffs, you know, album after album, they're just doing the same thing. So I don't know if people are intimidated by that or, mm-hmm, they just don't think it'd be worth it. But I'm very much looking forward to what that does.
I could totally see that. There's a lot of people that when you're singing their songs, mm-hmm, you just instinctively, me and my dad were talking about this, you just, it's hard. He said it's hard not to sing that song.
Yeah, Creed. Easy. Yeah. Right? That's what you were thinking?
You can't sing that without making the overly,
right,
emphatic voice.
Yeah.
Or, same thing with, like, Pearl Jam,
mm-hmm,
Bee Gees. Yep. God, I even do it with, like, the Beatles.
I mean, yeah.
You sing with, like, a little bit of an accent.
Because those bands did a good job of being distinctive in both their, we were talking about musicality, but, mm-hmm, I mean, like, also their vocals make it so impactful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, the vocals are such an important part. You wouldn't recognize the song if it didn't have that tone to it, that sort of twang, if you would.
So I found a little bit about them on their website.
Okay.
And it says that they were formed in 2000.
They cranked out a bunch of albums
in Muscle Shoals, Alabama,
between, like, 2003 and 2008. They, like, cranked out, like, six of these tribute albums.
Yeah. Which, I guess, you know, if you know what you're doing and the material's already there, if you can arrange it with a banjo and a mandolin, and, I mean, the possibilities are endless. It's got Tony Robertson on mandolin, Vance Henry on guitar, Anthony Richardson on banjo, and Ricky Rogers on bass. And it says the band's roots go all the way back to the late 1970s when Tony Robertson and Ricky Rogers were members of a local group called the Next in Line. All the members kind of switched off between different groups. They kind of came together in January of 2003. Anthony Richardson was, I guess the other three were in a group and they needed a banjo player. They do make a lot of original albums,
which I haven't listened to those.
It says Iron Horse has three self-produced albums containing previously unreleased compositions and Iron Horse composed originals. They were approached in 2003 by CMH Records to record a tribute album to Metallica,
Fade to Bluegrass,
which was released in October of 2003. And I guess that was so successful or so well received that they've recorded 12 projects for CMH Records.
Wow.
Tributes to Metallica, Led Zeppelin, Ozzy Osbourne, Modest Mouse, The Shins, Guns N' Roses, which we're talking about today, The Goo Goo Dolls, Hank Williams, Black Label Society, as well as others.
That's awesome.
So,
I like that diversity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that too.
Like when you can say Metallica, The Shins, and Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
That's a catalog.
Hank Williams.
Yeah, that's a catalog right there.
I mean, they don't just cover heavy metal, you know, they cover, you know, because Modest Mouse isn't heavy metal. What would you categorize?
Alternative. Go back, yeah. Straight back to that. Straight back to it.
If you don't know what it's, if you can't categorize it, it's alternative. That's the potpourri of music categories.
And I think that's what I enjoy most in a cover band is its diversity. Like you were talking about your dad's cover band. They do, mm-hmm, they do Pink Floyd, mm-hmm, and then they'll do the Decemberists, and then they'll do, you know,
the Beach Boys.
Yeah,
and,
it's that, you know, that's what I enjoy the most is you can bring in a full experience, because, mm-hmm, if I just wanted to see an AC/DC tribute band, I would search that out. If I went to go see a band and they only did one thing all night, I'm like, you should have, you know, committed. You should have had, you know, an outfit. You should have had, you know, an album you told me you were gonna do. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just how I feel about performers.
So the tracks on that album, I thought it was kind of a mix of really mainstream Guns N' Roses stuff and then lesser known,
yeah,
Guns N' Roses
stuff.
So
I've got the albums if you want them.
Go ahead.
The three, well, it's three albums and Use Your Illusion is a double album.
Uh-huh.
So they had Appetite for Destruction, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, and then GNR Lies, which were the three albums they pulled from.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about this a little bit earlier. Not a huge Guns N' Roses fan, so I looked them up. And every time I looked up one of their greatest hits albums, I couldn't find all of these songs. So, mm-hmm, like, they didn't do a deep dive, but they definitely picked some ones that,
yeah,
either they liked or they thought they could do something interesting with.
You're probably right on both of those accounts, and the fact that they probably thought that they could arrange them better,
right,
with the mandolin and the banjo and, you know, the instruments that they had on hand. Or they probably thought that they could you know, something popped about them that was unique that they thought that they could do, which I thought was kind of cool rather than just going to like the 10 most well-known
right.
Guns N' Roses songs.
Not to say that they didn't hit on Sweet Child of Mine and Paradise City, which yeah. they definitely did, but, you know, I'd never heard of Dead Horse or Mr. Brownstone.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Mr. Brownstone is like a really, you're digging a little bit there, but, you know, when they put it together, that was one of my tracks on the album that I liked the most.
Let's talk about that for a little bit. I was listening to it, I said, well, this sounds, Mr. Brownstone sounds like heroin. So I looked it up, it said, let me read you, because I looked up the Wikipedia, because this has a Wikipedia
I thought they were just
page.
Talking about an old English house.
Nope.
What?
Wrong again, Dan. You're always like, oh, it's a house, it's a house. I'm like, no, man, it's probably drugs.
It's drugs.
It's probably
that's
drugs.
That's our all.
So
it's, Mike's always convinced it's drugs. I'm always convinced it's some form of home.
The Wikipedia article says, the idea of the song came from two of the bandmates complaining about being heroin addicts when they started improvising lyrics and music. Parenthetical, quote, quote, Brownstone is a slang term for heroin.
What?
The lyrics make a clear reference to the tolerance that the drug causes in the verse that says, I used to do a little, but a little wouldn't do it, so the little got more and more. I just keep trying to get a little better, said a little better than before. Because that's how lyrics work. When they had the lyrics all together, they wrote it down on the back of a grocery bag and brought it to Axl Rose. Slash said the lyrics describe a typical day in the life of Slash and Stradlin.
A typical day.
He also states that it was the first song the band wrote after being signed by Geffen Records. Mr. Brownstone was the first Guns N' Roses single released outside of the U.S. Appeared on... Oh, that's great. Hey, rest of the world, this is what Axl Rose and Slash think about.
Apparently, he said it's like such a big part of his daily life.
I mean, heroin's not... It's not an easy drug.
It's not a big part of my daily life.
But I am going to write a song about
it. I would say it is a part. It has some part.
Wait, are you thinking about the houses again? Because, I mean...
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
I'm going to live in a house every day.
I live in a house.
Mr. Brownstone's about my life.
Yeah. So that was, I just listened to that and I said, probably about drugs.
it's so weird when you like find out what these songs are really about.
Yeah, especially because it's just so like, because you think of this time and you're like, you know, they can't have a lot of sexual innuendo. You know, it's these people just like everything's a lot clean cut. There's no explicitness. And you're like, he's just talking about like doing heroin.
Yeah.
And the tolerance he's building, and he's, like, addicted to it. Nobody caught this?
No.
Nobody. Well, it says Mr. It can't be a drug. Drugs don't have first names. That's crazy.
What the hell's Mr. Crowley about?
Mr. Crowley!
What the hell are you talking about?
Ozzy Osbourne?
It's probably weed. That's what the song Sweet Leaf's about.
There you go. Devil's Lettuce.
That's Lechuga de Diablo in Spanish, right?
I'd say the songs that you probably heard of the most on this album were Welcome to the Jungle.
Which is how the album starts out, appropriately.
Sweet Child of Mine,
right.
Paradise City.
Those are the three most. Those are the only ones I knew.
So you hadn't heard of Patience or Yesterdays or Don't Cry?
No.
I would say those would kind of be like the next tier.
I'm pretty
sure I've heard
them because I listened to Keishi, but... I wouldn't have told you that those were Guns N' Roses. Like, if I heard any of the first three you mentioned, I'm like, oh, I know, that's a Guns N' Roses song.
I would say those three would be like the second tier, and then you've got like Mr. Brownstone, Dead Horse, Out to Get Me, and Think About You would be like the third tier, where you're getting a little deeper into the Guns N' Roses catalog. By comparison, the Bette Midler album, I'd say the most well-known on this album, well, Waterfalls by TLC,
right?
I think is it for the contemporary audience.
Yeah. You Can't Hurry Love.
Mm-hmm. Can't Hurry Love.
Be My Baby, One Fine Day.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Sandman, of course.
So that's one of those songs that you remember, you know the song, but you don't really know who did it.
No idea. I thought it was the Cow Sills. Those are the only songs I would have recognized.
I think Will You Still Love Me Tomorrow is probably in that second tier then.
That's true. Then the rest were sort of...
Tell Him. Tell Him You're Never Gonna Leave Me. Tell Him
That the Exciters, of course. So you were just one more thing about, you were talking about not getting political, but like, it's interesting that a lot of these songs performed by all women were written by men.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was, and probably white men. So mm-hmm. even more so, like, just the layers of, I don't know what those layers would be described, but there's a lot of layers there. The complexity yeah. of what was performed by whom.
Yeah, you see names like Phil Spector and Burt Bacharach.
Right, Mac David, of yeah. course.
you see a lot of guys like that pop up on these, on the writing credits. Although you do see like Carole King,
yeah.
But she was kind of an oddity at that time, and the fact that she was a, you know, successful black woman entertainer that wasn't just a performer.
Yeah, it's like, what is it, the exception that proves the rule, right. almost. Right. So that's why you recognize her name, is because there was like four or five people doing that.
Yeah, most of the, you know, the African-American entertainers were performers who were getting screwed over by the record companies.
Right.
And all the way up until like, you know, the 80s and 90s, even. It's gotten, you know, a little better now with the fact that, you know, music is so accessible.
Yeah, I think it was Death Row Records really set everybody apart.
Yeah.
I'm going to represent you and kill the competition.
Yeah,
literally.
And if I don't like what you know, I'm going to hang the competition out a window.
Just that, allegedly. Huh?
Yeah, allegedly.
Huh? No, I think that was what he went to jail for.
Yeah, it totally
That
happened.
Was assault. Yeah,
it totally happened.
That was assault, guys.
Yeah, but I think with the age that we're in right now, you know, you can get your music out there without needing to rely on a record company, you know, so to speak. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, artists who, like Macklemore and Ryan Lewis, who got their, you know, music out there pretty much just using the technology that was available right. to them at the time. But back then it was mainly, you know, just these artists getting screwed over by and doing worldwide tours and not making any money
right.
and, you know, just getting screwed over by record companies. But somebody like Carole King, like I said, was the exception
yeah.
more so than the rule.
All right. You ready to get into the criteria?
Yeah.
Let's do it. It's been an hour. We're going to discuss which album deserves to be the best cover album. And we're going to do it by breaking it down into four criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Criterion one is re-listenability. Which album would you like to listen to over and over again? Dan.
I picked the Iron Horse album. It was close here for me.
Okay.
Because I guess the source material, I was a fan of both of them. Because I am, you know, I am a Guns N' Roses fan. A fact that I'm younger than you are. And
I'm younger than you.
Or, God... This
whiskey.
This whiskey's killing me.
He's two fingers deep, ladies and gentlemen.
That sounds like a good Wednesday afternoon. I mean,
oh, what's the name of that album? Two Fingers Deep. What a tribute to Michael McDonald's. Classic.
A tribute to your mom.
Aww.
But the fact that you're, you know, younger than me, I guess when I was my formative years, like. That's why when like Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 came out.
Okay.
Was huge.
Right.
Like, and then like that November Rain, like 10-minute video was out. That's when like MTV still played music videos.
I remember that.
You remember MTV? I was a big fan of Guns N' Roses. When the band broke up, when Slash left, and they had that guy with the Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket on his head, I didn't really give a shit.
Yeah.
And then Axl like went off and did his own thing.
Yeah.
And then he like fronted AC/DC on a tour.
Yeah,
that's weird.
Yeah, that's when Brian Johnson, they said, if you perform one more time, you're going to be permanently deaf. Mm. And he said, what? Because he was so hard of hearing.
He's like, "Wah!"
He definitely wasn't like that. Yeah.
I was such a fan of like both the source materials.
Yeah, of course.
You know, all the Motown songs and even like all the way up to like the TLC.
Right.
Song. I was a big, you know, huge TLC fan. I guess I just had more fun listening to the Iron Horse album. It was different than what I was used to, I guess. The Bette Midler songs were a little bit... She did perform some of them in a different way. She did do like country versions of a couple of them,
mm-hmm.
or at least one of them.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of cool, but... I just thought that, you know, hearing these songs that I knew so well sung in a different way and sped up,
yeah.
too, I thought was kind of cool, too. Because even when I was, like, singing along with them, because I knew the words to most of them, I was finding myself having to sing faster,
yeah.
which was kind of cool. You know, I thought that was kind of cool to, you know, hear a sped up, you know, like on steroids version, or on PCP version of Guns N' Roses. Because they're, you know, they're on heroin, but when you stack the PCP on top of that, that's when you get the Iron Horse album.
Yeah, that's, I think that's their subtitle.
Yeah.
Hey, do you like PCP?
Yeah.
Listen to this banjo.
Question mark.
So I also went with Iron Horse.
Yeah, you did.
And here's the reason why. Yes, you are older than me. However, when I was growing up on music, it was all oldies. So, mm-hmm. like, I liked Bette Midler's selection better than I liked Iron Horse's selection. Mm-hmm. However, Bette Midler had songs that I thought she could have cut off. And it's not that she should have cut them off, it's that I didn't like them as much. And that's because I'm sure when, you know, she was sitting down with her record execs, she's like, you know who we need to make this record for? A 30-year-old white man who grew up listening to the oldies. And everybody's like, you know, that's probably not our best demographic because he doesn't buy albums at Target. And they're like, okay, fair. So here's the issue. Take Me Home is 10 tracks long, which seems really short.
Mm-hmm.
However, they're like, we're going to make each one just what we need to do. Like, it's going to make it concise. It's going to make it strong. Where Bette Midler's, you're like, nah, this one's sort of like the last one I heard. Or this one's too slow. Or I've heard, you know, another band cover this and it was better. Mm-hmm. So it just, because it's a couple tracks longer, it just seemed like the Iron Horse one knew what it was doing when it was keeping it short.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Criterion 2, making it your own, distinctiveness. Who do you think was more distinct in their making it of their own?
It's kind of hard to argue against Iron Horse, just because everything was just a totally different arrangement. Even the parts where I was expecting them to like go higher with the octave, you know, then they would put like a simple harmony in there. So even like, even down to that level, I thought that they made it their own. Whereas Bette Midler did that on a few tracks, like I said, with taking Baby It's You by the Shirelles and turning it into like a, like more of like a gospel song. What can I do when it's true? Taking Waterfalls, which is like a, you know, hip hop song, and turn it into like a slow ballad.
Right.
Little Precious has a natural obsession for temptation, but it just can't see.
And take Can't Hurry Love by the Supremes and turn it into like a country and western song.
I need love, love, love to ease my mind.
But a lot of songs on her album that just sounded like the original. Like One Fine Day sounds almost exactly like the original version, which is good.
Yeah, because it's a great
it's
song.
It's a really good song.
Yeah. But why'd you cover it, bro?
Yeah. Like exactly. Mr. Sandman sounds exactly like the original. That's why I think I went with Iron Horse on there, just because it took a lot of thought into making those songs come out sounding differently. It took a whole lot of thought and effort into that. Whereas Bette could have just showed up on the day of recording and did a karaoke version of One Fine Day, and would have sounded great, but was it really making it her own? Not necessarily.
I agree with everything you said.
However,
exactly. I gave this one to Bette Midler sort of as like, not a negative, just when you, all of the songs sounded like she had performed them and written them. So it was sort of like she took all of the stuff that other people did and just performed it as she wanted to. Which is not a negative criticism, it's just, it is what it is. She knows how to perform only as she knows how to perform. Which is sort of showy, not necessarily like a diva, but she's the main event. Not the lyrics, not the band, but Bette Midler's front row and center, pretending to be three people. So I gave this to her because I thought she took everything from a diverse field of female artists, and they were all turned into Bette Midler songs, which sounds like a criticism because, I mean, by definition it is. It sounds like I didn't like it, but I just thought that she sort of sheared stuff off to fit it into her wheelhouse. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's why I gave this to her. Not necessarily because I think this is what everybody who makes a cover album should do, but I definitely thought that's what she did this time.
What about the third category?
Fresh takes.
Fresh takes.
So I wrote down the note that this is getting something new out of an old song.
Mm-hmm.
I gave this hands down to Iron Horse on this one. Specifically because of the Mr. Brownstone, because I tried to do my homework correctly, and I went back and listened to these songs as they're performed by, like, by the original people. The original Mr. Brownstone was like a rock and roll song. It was like supposed to be cool. It's about,
well, during heroin is cool.
It's about Slash, like, sitting around. He wakes up, doesn't move out of bed, then he does some heroin, then he goes to a show, then he does some more heroin. I'm like, it's not, none of it sounds fun. It's just like, hey, he doesn't even talk about how it makes him feel good.
Sounds which, awesome to me, Mike.
Which I'm assuming heroin people do that because it makes them feel good.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Nothing else.
That's why we do it.
Mr. Brownstone. But I thought,
kind of like, sound like, I always feel like somebody's doing heroin.
But so that song, and then definitely Welcome to the Jungle.
Rockwell needs to cover that, by the way.
He needs to get, is he still alive?
I don't know. That's a hell of a question when somebody doesn't even know if you're alive. Poor Rockwell.
So, like, I thought that their cover of Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City, and Mr. Brownstone, like, I got to listen to a new, an old song a new way.
And you're a pretty girl that's very hard to please. You can taste the bright lights, but you won't get them for free. In the jungle, welcome to the jungle. Feel my serpentine.
My experience is the best cover songs let me do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cover of Outkast's Hey Ya by an acoustic guitar. I think it's a band. It's called Obadiah Parker.
Yeah, he played that for me a lot.
And it's just him singing every single word. And when you slow it down, you're like, you know what? This song has a lot of feelings. Like, you're like, I'm feeling way more than I think Big Boy expected me to.
I thought I was just shaking it like a Polaroid picture.
Andre 3000 probably intended that. And he's just like, oh, I did too much coke. We better speed this up. Like, so I definitely gave this one to Iron Horse.
I did.
Fresh
for,
take.
Yeah, I did for the same exact reasons.
Oh my gosh.
I hate agreeing with you.
It's probably the worst thing we do.
Yeah. You got to hear things that, you know, a different way. And, you know, there's no other way to say that. There was a couple songs on Bette Midler's album that was, you got to hear, you know, hear them in a fresh way, a, you know, a different perspective. But
especially like when they were singing the Too Many Fish song. Mm-hmm. Which, I like that song. It was fun.
Too many fish in the sea.
It's just like when she, like when she gets to the part where she's like, what? And she's like, I'm like, first of all, he's a whale, so whales are mammals. And then she's like, I've got a bunch of krill back home. You're like, she's taking this fish analogy in a weird direction. You're like, are you trying to pick up men by saying you have krill? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a certain point when the slowing down and the inspection of certain lyrics, like the whole Teach Me song, when she's like, teach me, we're alone, so teach me tonight. And she didn't write these lyrics, but she's singing them slowly and like with enough enunciation that I'm like, you know, let's
come on, girls, let's go grab the early bird.
Yeah, just tap those brakes. That's all I want.
Just pump them a little bit.
Yeah, just pump the brakes. Look where you're going. You know, like, you chose to cover this song, and you're not taking those words out. We've talked about this before where
I'm gonna feed him some krill.
No, it's like, no, this isn't the end when she's like, come on, back to my place. I got some krill.
Is that Jerry Lewis?
Great Balls of Fire.
No, it's Jerry Lee Lewis.
Wait. Oh, no. Are those two different people?
Yeah, you think Jerry Lewis, the comedian who's not funny.
Oh,
except
yeah.
in France.
See, I thought...
Hey, lady!
And then the other one plays the piano very well.
Yeah, and bangs his cousin.
Everybody's got their vices,
yeah.
Okay?
Perfect.
Yours is heroin.
Yeah.
His is incest.
Mine and Guns N' Roses is heroin.
Just Slash. Axl didn't
his
do it.
Is ripping shit on the piano and banging his cousin.
And I think here's the one thing about cover songs that you don't hear a lot. It'll be a male covering a female's song or vice versa. And there's a Jack White from the White Stripes covers Dolly Parton's Jolene, and
mm-hmm.
he sang it as her, so he talks about, he sings the character of a woman talking to another woman about not stealing her man, and you're like, oh, that's cool,
mm-hmm.
just because he's like, this is the content of the song,
mm-hmm.
I'm just going to sing it, I'm not
yeah.
embodying the song, I'm just going to sing it, but when you hear it like the other way, and like whenever a man sings a song from the Motown era,
mm-hmm.
it you really have to change a lot
mm-hmm.
for it to fit into the other direction.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's very telling. But it's also when you hear it again, you're just like, oh, this is sort of cobbled together and it doesn't sync up as well. So, I don't know.
Katy Perry got a lot of flack for that when they were doing the big Beatles tribute.
Yeah.
Was it on the Grammys or American Music Awards a few years ago? And she changed the lyrics from she to he.
Right.
And everybody's like, oh, you can't do that.
So
sacrilege.
In a
blasphemy.
In a very funny turn, they were talking about Wyclef Jean, you know, from the Fugees, was singing Imagine by John Lennon. And when he said, imagine there's no God, he said, imagine... there's no God except the true God. And everybody's like, I think you're missing the point, big guy. Like, he's like, this is not a time to push your agenda. This is you misunderstood the song if you're changing it in that capacity.
He's an odd dude.
He at one point was literally talking about running for president of Haiti.
Yeah. And they were like, no, we're
he's
good.
From there. He doesn't live there.
Yeah. They're like,
he's
no, we're
from
good.
From there.
Well, like... when a country like Haiti, who's in as much turmoil as they are, doesn't want your help.
Your million-dollar help. They're like, you know what?
When they don't want your... Nah, we're good.
We
got to figure it out here.
We just had an earthquake. We're good for
yeah.
now. We had one natural disaster, bro.
That should tell you what they think about you.
Okay. So that was Fresh Take. Let's go to theme or diversity of tracks. So... did they pick all of the hits? Did they pick none of the hits? How'd you feel about the selection of tracks?
Okay, I was a little torn on this one because I like the fact that Iron Horse picked a mixture of, we kind of put them into tiers,
mm-hmm.
like the well-known mainstream stuff and then the stuff that...
B-sides.
Yeah, that most fans, you know, even like casual... I don't want to say I'm like a huge Guns N' Roses fan... but
yeah, because you're not calling it GNR.
Yeah.
That's the first clue.
And I'm not, you know, they're coming to St. Louis, like, first time since...
When you say they, you mean Axl Rose and some robots he found.
Yeah.
Like, Slash is dead, bro.
Like, this is the first time, like, they've been to St. Louis this summer since... God, how long ago was that when... they've been, like, blackballed from the city ever since that incident at Riverport Amphitheater, like, 20 years ago. You don't remember this?
No, it was 20 years ago.
Okay, so... Get in your Google machine if you're
okay.
listening to this and look up Guns N' Roses St. Louis. And you'll come across an incident that Axl Rose got pissed off at some fans at Riverport Amphitheater, which is now like Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. Like kind
still
of
on Riverport Drive.
In the,
you know where
in
it
the
is.
In the suburbs of St. Louis. And for those of you listening in Germany, St. Louis is a state in Missouri.
It's called Deutschland.
Which is in the Midwest of the United States.
We have a lot of immigrants in Herman, Missouri. Thank
yeah.
you very much.
Licking, Missouri. Where all my dad's relatives are from. The worst name ever. But he dove on some fans in the crowd because they were like using a camera, like a flash photography. Maybe one of those old-timey ones where they had to get under the hood.
Hold still! You're going to mess up the picture.
They had to get under the hood.
It's going to look like a ghost moving around so much.
I don't know what they could have done that I'm assuming it's one of those, like, those disposable cameras. Yeah.
They were just hitting the light.
He, like, got pissed off and, like, dove into the crowd, like, to beat up somebody. And there was, like, a fucking riot there.
Oh, my gosh.
And, you know, the show was canceled, and they basically were not allowed back into St. Louis for, you know. Them coming back to St. Louis this summer of 2017 is, like, kind of a big deal.
So big that we're going to go?
No.
I don't want to.
See, that's the thing. Like, I'm a Guns N' Roses fan, but I'm not going to go see them, you know, in concert. But just, like, to finish up the story, my dad is friends with a guy who collected a settlement from Axl Rose.
What?
Because he broke his collarbone when Axl Rose dove into the crowd.
His collarbone, oh my God.
So there you go. We know a lot of really cool people. Like, my dad's in a band. And my dad knows a guy that broke his collarbone by Axl Rose.
You know, like, famous MMA people, though, like, actually. Like, you've talked with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, like, nobody gives a shit about that.
Take that, Dan's ego.
That's just like, nobody cares. Nobody cares about anything I do. My wife doesn't even care about anything I do.
It's because it's so boring. Just pick something more exciting.
That's true. I can't argue with that.
All right, so what album do you think had a better pick of songs?
So what I was saying about the fact that they picked some songs that, like, fans of, even casual fans of Guns N' Roses would know.
Right.
And then they pick some that, like, even, I don't think I'm sure I've heard them, but right, I don't remember them.
Yeah, of course.
So I like the fact that they picked, you know, a mix of tiers of Guns N' Roses popularity as far as songs goes. But I gave it to Bette Midler.
You have to.
Because
she did such a good job.
Because I thought it kind of told a story of, like, the history of girl groups. I thought it kind of flowed from, like, the 60s to the 70s and then all the way up to the 90s.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that was by accident.
No.
I thought that was a way of kind of, you know, giving all the girl groups over the years their credit or,
right,
their just due. And, you know, it's kind of like a tribute to them. And I don't know if that was the actual intent, but I kind of think
that's what happened,
how it was. And, you know, that is also a way that kind of appeals to different demographics of you know, ages, too.
Yeah.
You know, because somebody that might not be familiar with, like, the Motown sound, you know, that TLC song, Waterfalls, was so big.
Right.
Kind of could, you know, draw in a different age group, too. But I thought it flowed, you know, really well in the fact, and it didn't go, like, exactly in order, you know, in the years that these songs,
right,
were released. I think that would have been a little too obvious or a little too, you know, presumptive.
It's also, I wouldn't have enjoyed it. I like how she's like, okay, we're going to, you know, these are songs about being in love. These are songs about getting broken heart. These are about independence, you know, like, I thought she did a better job with the theming with that.
But it was all like topics that you would expect girl groups to address.
Mr. Sandman.
Mr. Sandman.
It's about Coke.
Yeah. It was about sleeping pills, like somas and muscle relaxers.
Sand is, like, you know, powdery.
White line.
That one's pretty, that one's pretty direct, right? It's about driving.
Or they just go, blow! Rock! Blow! Like, you're not even trying to hide the fact that it's about cocaine. It might as well just be called Cocaine.
That's a song by Eric Clapton.
She don't lie. Cocaine.
It's a good song.
You're welcome.
I like that song.
You're welcome, guys.
It's a good song.
So I gave it to Bette Midler. I assume you did also?
Yeah, I gave it to her because I thought she, like you said, paid tribute to, I think that a major artist decides to do a tribute album, they get to sort of put the spotlight on songs and artists that they find other influential or are worthy of their attention. And so even if they don't intend it, like, this opened up more artists that I would be interested in. And I think that's a really cool thing that someone in their place gets to do. I thought that Iron Horse did a good job where it's like, hey, maybe you haven't heard Patience, or maybe you haven't heard, you know, Out to Get Me. So why don't you go check that out?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, it's on Appetite for Destruction. Which is, like, not to criticize them, because I thought this was a great album, and maybe Guns N' Roses just doesn't have that eclectic of a catalog, you know? But I thought Bette Midler did a better job of saying, hey, you know, you should go check out the Chiffons, because you know this one song, and I'm going to do it in a certain way that maybe you want to go back and check out their catalog.
So what was your favorite song on the Bette Midler album?
My favorite one on Bette Midler was Give Him a Great Big Kiss. I just thought it was so silly. Before we started recording, I listened to the original, and Bette Midler definitely added like some of her own pizzazz, so I thought that was fun. Like you said, One Fine Day, grew up listening to that song. I thought it was really fun, but mm-hmm. it was just too, I should have just listened to, you know, the Chiffons do it. But like, mm-hmm. I liked this one because it was silly. She got to add some of her own take, you know, even if it was all in studio and none of it was like anything but scripted. Mm-hmm. That was my favorite one. I thought she did the best with that.
My favorite was actually He's Sure the Boy I Love. I always dreamed the boy I love would come along, and he'd be tall and handsome, rich and strong. Now that boy I love has come to me, but he sure ain't the way I thought he'd be.
Which was, that was pretty silly.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good one too.
But I thought, that's actually got Darlene Love on there, who's also a famous singer in her own right. I'm sure you've heard her, Christmas, the snow's falling down.
Not a huge Christmas fan.
Christmas, I'm walking, watching.
Not a huge Christmas fan, Dan.
Yeah, I know you hate anything that brings joy to people's lives.
Just during the December season. Everything else I like.
But she's got a... I mean, Darlene Love's just like a fantastic singer in her own right. But I thought that was covered a song by the Crystals,
mm-hmm.
which is probably like a lesser known of that era.
If I'd heard of them, I hadn't heard this song before.
But yeah, I really enjoyed that song. And Be My Baby, too. Her version of that I thought was really good, too. That's just an awesome song by the Ronettes originally. But I thought that Bette did a good job of covering that. What about your least favorite song on that album?
This is a relatively controversial, Waterfalls.
Mm-hmm.
Because I thought she tried to bring her own pretentious here gravitas to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unnecessary. Like, this song is strong on its own, and it's slow on its own. And she just tried to... I don't think she tried to up the tempo. She tried to slow it down too much.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, kept doing the thing where it was like, I'm gonna, like, warble on this part.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed... artificially important, where like the song itself and the, you know, the lyrics and the content were strong. They didn't need her to slow it down and bring attention to it the way she did.
I agree with that, but I think conversely, I think she had to just play devil's advocate. I think she kind of had to do something totally different on that
because
one.
Because it was so much like a girl group.
Yeah.
Like, that was TLC's girl group song.
Yeah.
Or like, of Motown era. Because
yeah.
The rest of theirs were like upbeat, you know, and in your face.
Like, if she would have done, like, if she would have tried to do... like a hip-hoppy version of that song.
Oh, it would have been garbage.
Yeah, it would have came off really stupid.
So bad.
Especially if she would have tried to do like the rapping part.
pretty cool, though.
Yeah. I seen a rainbow yesterday, but too many storms are coming on the wind, chasing out my God.
So I would have listened to that, but you wouldn't need to put like a sick beat over it.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's your least favorite song?
Probably It's the Girl.
Yeah, that song wasn't that great.
No, I mean... It isn't the paddle, it's not the canoe. It isn't the river or skies that are blue. It isn't the love dreams that bring joy to you. It's the girl. Oh, it's the girl. It isn't the Brooklyn.
I really didn't like the Teach Me song, but I don't think that was her fault that was bad. I think that was just a creep gross song that
yeah.
I didn't like. But yeah, it's the name of the album.
Yeah.
And it was so poorly done.
Yeah, it's just kind of weak. I mean, it's not...
There's like a call and response. And yeah.
And then I guess I didn't really... I mean, I got to give her credit for doing like a country and western version of You Can't Hurry Love.
Right.
But I didn't really like it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just because I like the original so much.
Yeah, it's the Supremes, like...
It's kind of hard to mess with
that.
And
it's only one person singing it.
And maybe that's not fair to her.
So you need to write her an apology now.
I guess I should use pronouns. Goddamn. When I say her, Bette Midler, I guess I shouldn't be too hard on her because it's not really her fault that the original song was so good. I didn't really... And credit to her for, you know, trying something new with that, but I just didn't really care for that.
Yeah.
So then on the Iron Horse album...
Let's do least favorite first. What's your least favorite?
Well, you said it was kind of controversial that you said Waterfalls. I'm going to say it's kind of controversial that I say Welcome to the Jungle.
Legit.
And that was actually the first song on the album.
Which they couldn't have put it somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
That's how they open every concert.
Yeah. You're in the jungle, baby.
Probably encore, too.
You're going to die.
Right. And they're like, bow, 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 bow.
We got your disease in the jungle. Welcome to the jungle. Bring you to your knees.
I don't know. I just when I first heard it, it sounded more like a joke, like a Weird Al version of. Whereas the other songs on the album really sounded like. That's cool.
Yeah.
What they did was cool. But with Welcome to the Jungle, it kind of sounded like, that's kind of goofy.
Like, is the jungle of, like, northern Kentucky?
Yeah.
Like,
there's a jungle out there. That's where Bigfoot is.
I think there's a lot to be said about the idea of covering Guns N' Roses.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't say you're going to cover them and not play Welcome to the Jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't cover that in any distinct way without completely imitating it. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, we're going to flaunt that because we play bluegrass, and this one guy sings kind of high, and we play a banjo under it. And it just flops, you know?
Welcome to the jungle. We got fun
and games. We got fun and games. You're going to die.
You're going to die.
Feel my serpentine. So it's just like, I mean.
I'll let you feel my serpentine if you're nice.
By the way, I did not know that's what they were saying. So I got to learn some of the lyrics. Turns out they're pretty dumb.
Yeah.
So my least favorite was Sweet Child of Mine,
mm-hmm.
because that's the song I like from them.
Uh-huh.
She got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of my childhood memories. Everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky. Now and then when I see her face, she takes me away to that special place. And if I stare too long, I'd probably break down and cry.
And I think the reason I like it is because of they slow it down. And like you said, with this one, they sped it up because that's how bluegrass music works.
You ever heard the Sheryl Crow version of that?
What? Yeah. No.
It was on the Big Daddy soundtrack.
Which I have on cassette, so I don't know. I have the movie on VHS cassette.
Ah.
Slow down.
It's really good.
Okay.
Speaking of cover songs,
she didn't do a whole cover album,
but she did like an acoustic version of Sweet Child.
I'd listen to that.
Yeah, it's good.
That sounds cool.
It's good.
But yeah, it sort of just dropped the ball.
What about your favorite song?
Favorite was Paradise City.
Yeah, I like
that. I was so impressed with, because that's a dumb song.
Mm-hmm.
Now take me down to the Paradise City where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. Oh, won't you take me home? Take me down to the Paradise City where the grass is green and the girls are pretty. Won't you take me home?
I think it's 45 words that are just sung over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I thought they lended, you know, they end the album strong. Thought they added a lot of cool bluegrassy to it. Sort of made it their own in the right way. So
mine was Don't Cry.
Talk to me softly. There's something in your eyes. Don't hang your head in sorrow, and please don't cry. I know how you feel inside, I've been there before.
Yeah, that was a good song.
That was a really good song. Like I said, that's kind of in that second tier of Guns N' Roses songs, right. But that's actually one of my favorite Guns N' Roses songs.
Because you don't like the hits.
No, I love the hits.
You like those deep...
I'm a total sellout.
Those deep cuts.
I'm a total sellout. I love all the hits. Play it on the radio and I'll love it. Like, I'll hate it one day and then you play it on the radio and I'm like, oh, this is the greatest fucking song ever. But, like, Don't Cry is a really good song, if you haven't heard the original version of it. But, yeah, they just did it, like, they could have released that song as their own.
Right.
Like, if Guns N' Roses had never done it. And it would have been a hit, I think. Because I think it would. They just did such a good job with that, with the harmonies and everything.
Yeah.
You know, when you got a voice like Axl's, you can't... I like that they didn't try to go as high as he goes, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
I heard somebody talk about, like, when Axl was touring with AC/DC recently, that he could do a lot of the Bon Scott songs that Brian Johnson couldn't do because of their vocal range. So that just shows you that he's got this like, range of vocals that
he's got a great falsetto. Yeah.
You know.
Is that Immigrant Song? Love that song.
I'm on the land of the accent, though. Something like that.
Yeah, no, that's right. I don't remember the next part. Something, something, here we go. That's wrong. That's way wrong. Great song, though.
Yeah, but, I mean, I like how they did it with lower harmonies, lower tone harmonies, rather than trying to match him. I thought that was cool, too. And that you could really see that on this song, too.
I think...
is really good.
Something that's unspoken about the whole premise of a bluegrass cover or tribute is that it's going to be highlighted vocals, no drums, all acoustic all acoustic string instruments, like some harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of some of the songs we picked were that they're slowed down and that they instantly become sadder, somewhat more introspective. And I thought that's why Mr. Brownstone did such a good job of highlighting, hey, this is what it's probably about. Or if not, we're going to put this aspect on it and you're going to actually hear what it's saying, and now you can think about it something different. And I thought that's why the two songs we picked, like, those are rock songs,
mm-hmm.
but when you slow them down, and I think bluegrass is usually sung at sort of a higher pitch, but not like rock mm-hmm. rock band high, you're like, oh, this sort, I can see this in a different light. It could be sung by somebody else and interpreted differently. And so I think that's why Welcome to the Jungle was such a flop. It's mm-hmm. just like, no, this is about how badass everything is. And you're like, bring in the mandolin.
You're going to tell me mandolins aren't badass, then.
You're a liar.
We can't be friends anymore.
You're a damn liar.
You're a goddamn liar.
All right. So let's take a look at the scoreboard. Iron Horse's Take Me Home, the Bluegrass Tribute to Guns N' Roses, is our cover band winner.
Mm-hmm. 5-3.
Defeating Bette Midler's It's the Girls.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be back.
Both albums are worth listening to, though.
Definitely.
Yeah.
We don't get to say that almost ever. No. But
sometimes we say neither one is. There are no winners.
We say no one's a winner, but this one beat the other one. So today, both winners, but the ultimate winner is Iron Horse. Give it a listen and come back in just 1 second to hear our recommendation for cover albums. Oh, recommendation time. It's like every time we do it, the banjo sounds the same. All right, Dan.
Banjo's out of tune.
There's... how many strings are in a banjo? 9?
6.
Nice. All right, so we just covered cover albums. Let me do that again.
I'd say we covered it pretty well.
And so now we're going to give you a recommendation of a cover album that you should listen to. Dan, you want to start or you want me to go?
I will go, if you don't mind.
Of course. By all means.
So... mine is kind of falls into something I said earlier, where it talks about artists that were bigger in past years, kind of, you know, getting older and trying to do a cover album to kind of reintroduce themselves into the mainstream culture, so to speak. So I came across this album, I don't know, 7 or 8 years ago. I was at a Barnes & Noble,
Oh yeah, it was a long time
bookstore.
Ago.
Bookstore. Like so sad. Brick and mortar bookstore.
Before they only sold DVDs.
Yeah. And I heard this Frank Sinatra like cover of, I think it was Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana.
Less dangerous, here we are now. Entertain us, I feel stupid. Contagious, here we are now. Entertain us, I'm a lotto, an albino, a mosquito.
Crazy.
And I came home and I tried to figure out who it was. Turns out it was Paul Anka.
What?
Yeah.
The Paul Anka?
Yeah, I don't know if you know who Paul Anka is. He was, a crooner from, like, the 60s and 70s. And
he sort of came in a little later.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't riding the coattails, but he was definitely, he was on the wave.
Yeah. He was kind of like 60s and 70s kind of crooner, but sang, like, the Sinatra-type songs, you know, very well-known singer. And he did this album called Rock Swings. And it was back in 2005. And it was like jazz covers of rock and pop songs from the 80s and 90s. So you got like It's My Life by Bon Jovi. You've got True, and I don't remember who does it, but it's I know this much is true. Yeah, I don't know who does that song.
No,
but
neither do I.
Eye of the Tiger.
Survivor, of course.
Everybody Hurts by R.E.M.
That's awesome.
Wonderwall by Oasis.
That's really cool.
Black Hole Sun by Soundgarden. Jump by Van Halen.
The David Lee Roth era, yeah. Of course.
Smells Like Teen Spirit. Hello by Lionel Richie. The Way You Make Me Feel by Michael Jackson.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. So that's my pick for cover albums. It's called Rock Swings by Paul Anka. I'm sure you can find like a used copy for like $2 on Amazon or eBay or something like that.
Or just steal it, stupid.
Or you can get a virus on your computer like Mike did and go to thepiratebay.org.
It all worked out. I don't want to worry about it.
Is it .org or?
I'm not allowed to tell you. By the time this comes out,
if you don't know what it is.
It would probably change by now.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Okay, so I'm going to talk about my favorite cover album, and it's sort of what inspired this episode, because sometimes what we do is we'll talk about things we like and then sort of figure out other...
Like heroin. Mm-hmm. I like heroin.
Yeah, so the next episode is going to be needle drugs.
What's the better needle drug?
Stupid Dan. So one of my favorite cover albums that when I was in high school and was listening to it, didn't know it was a cover album because I was stupid, is called Renegades by Rage Against the Machine. And it was their last album that they made as a group because of an MTV Music Awards nonsense where they didn't win. So their bassist like went crazy and like made this huge scene, and then their lead singer got like really upset, so he like split with the band, and then they hooked up with Soundgarden's Chris Cornell, made Audio Slave, which, you know, whatever. But so this was their last album, and it was called Renegades, and this was like the first time I'd heard music by African Bambaataa, which is what the album's actually named after, Renegades of Funk. And then they had some Cypress Hill cover, which hadn't listened to before. And then they went some, you know, in a weird direction where they had like Bruce Springsteen and the Rolling Stones Street Fighting Man and Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan's Maggie's Farm. Like, they took these songs and they made them very listenable to definitely a generation of kids, because I was a kid at the time, like, who had never heard any of this stuff. And it was all in line with their, like, you know, anti-establishment message. And that, you know, they were able to take this stuff and look at it in a, you know, hard rock. They were also called NU Metal, which is new metal at the time, because they were having trouble categorizing music. But I just thought that this is definitely a good way to turn on a new audience to this kind of music. But it's also a way to highlight this is not the first time people have been thinking about this sort of material. Like, this opened the door, I'm sure, to a lot of people who had never heard of like early rap or you know, early hardcore stuff.
Yeah, and like Eric B and Rakim and Africa Bambaataa.
I was able to like
EPMD.
I listened to this all the time, like all the time. And then it also had depending on which album you got, because there were two. This is when I bought albums. They released two because they had one that was like red and blue and the other was like green and brown, I think. Mm-hmm. And you got two bonus tracks, depending, and they were from a live concert. And they
yeah,
were different.
So it was a Best Buy limited edition.
That's where I bought it. I bought all my CDs at Best Buy.
There you go.
But so
shout out to Best Buy.
Nope. Shut, shut down the Best Buy.
Whoa.
No, it was just like, it was the perfect iteration where they made all these songs their own, but they weren't all sung the same. Maggie's Farm is sung at a slow pace, but it's like you could hear that it's a song about frustration, and it's like they take the content and they get to add another layer to it by the way that they play it. Just, I don't know if you're familiar with Rage Against the Machine, but between their vocals, Zach De La Rocha teamed up with a handful of different like rappers, and then he brings a strong presence to it. And then their guitarist Tom Morello is just, some of the stuff he can do with an electric guitar is like super crazy, and he brings it to these songs that are really just sort of known for their lyrics. Bruce Springsteen, everybody's not like, oh yeah, I'm gonna listen to that track because of the guitar, but like they let Tom Morello riff on that with like some crazy stuff, and it really amps up the whole experience. So that's my recommendation. Cool. Renegades by Rage Against the Machine. If you want, I could burn you a CD of it. If you're not comfortable stealing it, that's fine. I could burn you a CD.
Yeah, just send Mike your address and
please
and 47 cents and he'll mail it out to you.
Kind of ironic. I do support the postal system.
I love the postal.
I would rather not steal from those guys.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of forever stamps.
Yeah,
I don't know what to tell you.
You're the same business, man.
Yeah.
Slap 47 cents on something, they'll take it all the way by hand all the way across the country for it.
I don't think you know how the postal system works.
Shout out to the post office.
I think they just take a
photo. The old Pony Express.
They take a photograph of what you wrote and just email it to them. All right, so this has been Cover Albums edition of Comparing Apples to Oranges.
This has been Shitting on Best Buy with Mike and Dan.
We'll see you in hell, dummies. Now
right
to,
next to Circuit City.
Now to the plug system. Dan, you got some stuff that you want to plug?
Sure.
And talk about your stuff?
Sure. Get all your shit in.
That is not what plugs about.
Yeah.
Dan?
Still got the wrestling podcast, if anybody's interested in that bullshit.
You get Jess on there yet?
No.
Last time we were talking, you said you were going to get her on there. Nobody's going to listen if she's not
she
on.
Doesn't like the sound of her voice. I said, God, I don't like the sound of my voice either. I sound like, ooh, boo, like, I sound like an idiot.
So the whole point of putting out a podcast is that other people have to listen
yeah,
to it.
That's what I sound like.
I don't listen to it myself.
The whole time. God, I wouldn't listen to myself if you paid me. You sound awful. But
nobody's going to pay me.
Rhino Wrestling Review. It's on YouTube and iTunes. Spelled R-Y-N-O. And you can follow me on Twitter at Dan Rhino. D-A-N-R-Y-N-O. All one word. I'd love to interact with you.
Oh boy! Dude, they
wink,
can't,
wink.
They can't hear your eyebrow lift, bro.
You can't read my facial expression.
You're not
right
the
now,
Rock. We can't hear it.
But I'm really interested right now in interacting with you and hearing your Mr. Brownstone stories.
So we'll catch you next time, guys. This has been Mike,
Dan,
and this is Comparing Apples to Oranges.
Bye. You can't stop us now.
Thanks for listening to episode 14 of the podcast, and I hope you liked it. Look us up on Tumblr. I'm going to update that soon, I promise. We are Comparing Apples to Oranges. It's all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where all the links for co-hosts and will be info about upcoming and past episodes. Any comments or ideas for future episodes of the podcast, please send it to. We got Twitter, that's at the Cato Podcast, all one word. Or email us at CatoPodcast@gmail.com. Our intro, outro, and music bed music was called Thumbs Up by a guy named Leisure B. Check him out if you like it. He's at thehumanworkshop.com. All right. Catch you next time. Bye.